Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Rose Mercier, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So the voice of Rose Mercier here on the Tennis Podcast, helping us to introduce the latest show on a day when we are midway through Indian Wells. Both Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, are covering Indian Wells. Me, the women's event, Catherine, the men's event. But we are in very different climes at the moment, on very different time zones, I think it would be fair to say, because Catherine is there. She is in Indian Wells. It is... What time of the day is it, Catherine, where you are as we record?
It is 8:41 p.m. But I reckon you say the climes are different, but I think the climates we're currently experiencing are probably not that different. It's like the coldest Indian Wells since my parents came to Indian Wells and jinxed the weather. What would that have been, 2005, 14 years ago or something?
The Whittaker family curse.
Yeah.
Operation once again in Indian Wells.
Yeah, the legendary story of my dad having to buy woolly socks on a trip to Indian Wells.
I did see a coach hit those lows yet.
But
I saw somebody in a hoodie today watching the tennis in Indian Wells.
I was wrapped in a blanket in the studio. They had to go out to a Target store. A lovely runner went to a Target store and bought three big woolly blankets for the studio.
I see.
That's the glamour of TV, people. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I am currently in London, where I'm commentating on the tennis for BT Sport. Catherine's over there presenting for Prime Video. Where I am right now, it's 3:42 a.m.
3:42 a.m.
Yes. So all of my neighbours in the hotel that I'm in, apologies for my voice if I'm a bit too loud.
You're up with the partridge, David.
Yes, I am. I feel bright and breezy and I'm absolutely fine. So give me about 10 more minutes and then ask me. But anyway, we've got loads of tennis
to talk about. You're still perkier than me and it's 3:42. It's all wrong.
It's all wrong. This is the sort of dedication levels that we are giving you here on the Tennis Podcast on episode 515. We record at all hours of the day and night. This is your evidence right here. And we've got so much to talk about because as well as the tennis, the men's and women's events are now, what are we at? About the third or fourth round stage, aren't we?
Yes, I do find, I'm loving almost everything about Indian Wells. I do find the scheduling, the stretched outness of it, and the fact that the men's and women's events, though here in tandem, they're at different stages, and the women's main draw starts a couple of days earlier than the men's, and you don't have one half the draw playing one day and one the next, and all the seeds getting byes. I do find it just a little bit jumbled. I'm quite visual in my brain works quite visually, and I don't have a sort of clear vision of what stage the tournament is at.
No, and
it's just, yeah, it's a bit of a mess.
I feel a bit thrown out even by the Sunday start of Monte Carlo and the French Open, let alone the sort of Tuesday, Wednesday type of let's do qualifying, and then let's start the women's tournament one day early, and then let's start the blokes on about Thursday.
Yeah, because they play the same number of rounds, so yeah. I don't quite understand that. But anyway, look, it's a fabulous tournament. But I just wish they'd be a bit more strategic and linear.
Right.
About
so
scheduling.
Change it for next year, Indy Wells. All right, because you know you might have built your new 8,000 seat stadium
it's
too.
Messing with my mind.
You know, Catherine Whittaker's in town now, and she needs to get a head around this. All right. That's the most important thing.
Thank you very much, David.
So this is your first time in Indy Wells, isn't it?
My first time, yeah. It has not disappointed. Other than the weather, it has not disappointed. I see why everybody raves about it. I was really, being the slight contrarian that I am, I was really ready to sort of not love it quite as much as everybody told me I was going to. You know, bit of an eye roll. Do you know what I mean? Everyone goes, oh, it's just the most wonderful place. People are evangelical to the point of irritation about Indian Wells, but I probably will be one of those people from now on because it is wonderful. It is absolutely wonderful.
Magnificent. Okay. All right. So you have been covering the men's tournament, as I said. I'm covering the women's tournament. We'll compare notes on where we are and the matches we've seen, et cetera, very soon. But there's other stuff to talk about because we've had quite a week, haven't we? Certainly in men's tennis, and we'll get on to talk about that. I mean, I had Andy Murray with us for the podcast the other day, our bonus pod. What did you make of what he had to say?
Oh, very similar to what you three had to make of it. It was a lovely, uplifting podcast. Great to see him hear him. You could hear the weight lifted off his shoulders. It was amazing. None of it was hugely new. I mean, my impression from after the Australian Open, it was quite different to it. I think other people, there were factions of tennis that felt sort of shortchanged or messed around by Murray. Like, oh, you told us you were going to retire and now you might not retire. Well, no, he didn't ever say that. He said, look, I'm probably going to have this surgery. No one's ever come back from it before. Obviously, I'd love to be the first, but there's absolutely no evidence currently to suggest that that'll be possible. Mm. Unfortunately, that doesn't fit into a lovely, easily packaged headline, but his tune hasn't changed. He still primarily had that surgery for the purpose of improving his quality of life post-tennis, well, currently and post-tennis. And because of the person that he is, he still is going to try and see if it's possible to come back. But there's zero expectation that that's possible. And it's amazing to, I'm sure there are still big ups and downs, but it's brilliant to hear that he seems to have reached a peace with that situation, you know, that almost he's been able to reclaim some agency in the situation by having that surgery as horrible as it is. You know, he's not just sitting around and waiting and hoping. He's made a decisive decision, and he's taken back control, to use the language, to use some very current political language.
Yeah, somebody else, some other people who've taken back control are the players.
Ooh. At least I led you into that.
You
David.
Did, yeah. The Players Council, in a very confusing situation, I find really. The news is that the ATP's president and chairman, effectively the boss, Chris Kermode, who's been there for 5 years, he's in his sixth year, has been ousted. And he will see out the final year of his contract this year. It will not be renewed. That decision has been made after a vote by the players. The Players' Council consists of, I think it's 10 players, isn't it? And I think they were equally split, 5 and 5. So it then went to a vote of the players' board, the board of directors, of which there were three people on that. Justin Gummelstub, who we've spoken so much about recently, Alex Inglot, the brother of Dominic Inglot, the doubles player. Alex Inglot works for Sports Radar, which is that, I think it's that Bet Data agency. And then David Edgars, who's the vice president of Tennis Channel. So they voted 0 in favour of Chris Kermode no longer carrying on in his role. And I mean, that didn't come as a surprise in the end, because we'd heard all the political manoeuvrings. David Edgars had been added to the board very recently. It was believed that he is very close to Justin Gummelstob, and that Gummelstob was against Chris Kermode continuing. And so, yes, all the omens pointed to what we ended up getting. And yes, we received a press release which said that Chris Kermode would no longer carry on, that his six-year tenure at the helm of the ATP was over. And the press release said a tenure in which we'd seen record prize money and commercial growth for the organisation, while attendance and viewership had soared. Kermode's vision and leadership since 2014 had been instrumental in the creation of landmark new ATP events, such as the award-winning Next Gen ATP Finals and the ATP Cup, which is going to start in the new year next year. He's overseen the remarkable success of the NITO ATP Finals in London since 2009 and has also played a crucial role in forging some of the biggest sponsorships in the sport, including, I should add, NITO themselves. So, yeah, when you read that, you kind of think, hold on, why are we getting rid of him again? Anyway, let's get the view of a couple of other people here. Judy Murray said it's sad to read this on Twitter. Feliciano Lopez said it's very bad news for the sport. Magnus Norman, sad day for the ATP Tour. Incredible job this man did for the players and the tournaments. Stan Wawrinka, I'm really, really sad and disappointed. If you look at what he's achieved for tennis, it's been amazing. Leighton Hewitt, a disappointing decision. I mean, it goes on. And the tournament council, this very strange situation of the ATP being, I mean, it's strange in as much as in what are the walk of life? Would you get a circuit half owned by players and half owned by tournaments? But that's what we've been used to for the last 30 years. The tournament council were very much against it, the move. And actually, that seems to be one of the things that has led to the players believing and on that council that there is justification for him leaving. The fact that the tournaments were so behind him staying, i.e. it isn't as good for the players. So that's your up sum. The gist of it is, Novak Djokovic is the head of the player council, and somewhat surprisingly, at least for me, he was reluctant to reveal how he voted. Maybe that shouldn't be surprising, but I did think that given the sensitivity of the issue, that he would probably just tell us categorically why the decision had been made and where he saw it. But he decided he wanted to respect, in his words, the confidentiality of the vote, and didn't want to disclose his opinion. So that's about the sum of it. What's your making of it, and what have you been hearing over there in Indian Wells, Catherine? Because I imagine it's been a pretty hot potato.
I found the whole thing pretty extraordinary, really. Not necessarily surprising, because there have been rumblings of this for so long. I found it surprising that the board vote was 3-0. I have to say, I didn't realise the structure was of the organisation was such that the player council could be split, and yet the player representatives on the board could not reflect that split, could not reflect the feelings of the player council in the way they voted. Are they therefore free to completely disregard how the player council votes? Is it just a sort of steering thing? Is it just his guidance of how we feel, but feel free to vote however you like in on the board? So I don't quite understand that. I think it's poor that nobody from the player council, no official player council statement has been released, no explanation at all has been released for the reasons for that vote. We can all speculate, but there's been nothing official, and I can understand in terms of personal preservation why Novak Djokovic doesn't want to be drawn on it, but just as the tournament council have done, you'd think the players council as a whole could release a statement. I realise that they were split, but nonetheless they could release a statement explaining that split, explaining the two sides of it. They don't necessarily have to reveal exactly how everybody voted, but some sort of accountability. But therein lies the issue, because this is we're having to speculate now because we're having to assume that basically they don't consider themselves accountable because they want the ATP to be a union of the players and not essentially the governing body of men's tennis. They want it to, or they certainly they want there to be a separate players' union. What I don't understand is why any of this is specific to Chris and why it will be any different with any other chairman and CEO. Because the issue that they seem to have is with the structure of the ATP. And look, I hear that there is a fundamental conflict of interest at the heart of the organisation structure. I personally think, and I really get the feeling that most people in tennis think that Chris has done an exceptionally good job of balancing that fundamental conflict. But look, I understand why people are wary and have issues with that conflict, but it is nothing specific to Chris. So I don't understand why he has been made the fall guy. And if this is a move intended to change the whole structure of the organisation rather than something specific to one individual, isn't that kind of a coup? Mm. Isn't that what this is? Or yeah. Certainly the first move in a coup.
And this is where I would be concerned for the future is that I think you just are going to end up with gridlock in every vote. I think one of the things that Chris has done well is you heard those things that he has achieved. He's sort of achieved things in spite of the structure of the ATP. And if you want to keep it together and keep moving forwards, you need somebody who's able to act as a diplomat and have vision and be prepared to drive things through, but take other people with you at the same time. I just think, given the strength of the opposition to this move on the tournament council side, added to all of those voices we've just heard from some pretty big names, I just think you're going to get this standoff now pretty much everywhere you go. And yes, that might lead to the ultimate total upheaval and change of the structure, maybe for the long-term good. Who knows? Maybe the fact that this will lead to the whole thing being chucked up in the air and you getting a players' union. But I don't think this is a time for that sort of instability, and given how much instability is already out there. And plus, is it really that wrong? I mean, are they really getting such a bad deal, the players? I mean, yes, there are people who might say, people are 150 downwards are not making enough money. Yeah, maybe they're not, but maybe they shouldn't be. I don't know how many players should be making a really good living. Certainly the ones that are in the top 50 are doing absolutely fine. So I don't know. I think that it's baby out with bathwater, this, and I think it's dangerous.
Yeah, I think so too. And we're now in a situation where we don't really trust, certainly not, you know, where speculation fills a vacuum, doesn't it? So with the vacuum of information, we've kind of got no reason to trust anybody's motives. You know, it's the same old thing that we've been talking about for months. Who has tennis's best interests at heart? You know, just tennis. And I think there are an awful lot of people involved in this who may not have tennis's best interests at heart. Look, they might, but without them explaining themselves, just looking at the bare facts of the situation, I find it hard to give benefit of the doubt. But I really feel for Chris Kermode. Look, I think he'll be fine because, you know, he's got a heck of a CV behind him now. So I'm not, you know, worried about his future or his employment prospects. I just don't think he deserved this, and it must be a pride wounder for someone like him. And I think the ATP, by and large, under his tenure, has been in great shape, and he's done a great job, and he'll be sorely missed.
I should say, when Novak Djokovic did speak, he spoke at some length without revealing the details of how he personally felt about it. He spoke on behalf of the council and what they'd decided, and he spoke about the flawed structure of the ATP. He said it's a very difficult position to be in as president because you have to choose between the players and the tournaments. So I feel it's something we have to address as a group, the governing structure. I feel like it's time to make changes to protect the president.
But David, none of that is specific to Chris.
Yeah.
How will that be different under any new chairman unless they have a new chairman in mind who is somebody that they know will be amenable to those plans to completely overhaul the organisation? So who is that person? Who is that person?
I would guess that it comes down to Chris probably being unprepared to go along with this idea of...
Well, to dismantle the organisation that he governs. I mean, what CEO would go, oh, right, okay, you wanna take my ship apart? Go ahead, take the sails.
And the other element, of course, to it is, the other uncomfortable truth in all of it is that one of the three people that voted... And admittedly, it wasn't a decisive vote because it was 3-0 in black and white terms. But one of them was Justin Gimelstob, who is currently charged with a situation that could lead to a trial. And you know, it's very uncomfortable knowing that. So you know, he's going to be in court on Wednesday. And some people's view is, well, innocent until proven guilty. But at the same time, this is somebody who has stepped down from his role at the Tennis Channel whilst he deals with this situation. And yet he stays on the ATP board and he takes part in a vote which has massive repercussions for the sport. So what happens if he did get found guilty now? I mean, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, and if you're uncomfortable with conflicts of interest within tennis, and one of your board, you know, take away the trial in that situation, one of your board members is somebody that, you know, is walking conflicts of interest, really. I mean, look, we all have them. I completely accept that. But, and that, you know, freelancers in tennis, it can be hard to avoid. But he is an absolute beacon of conflicts of interest, isn't he? He's a coach, he's on the players' board, he's a commentator, he's a shareholder in Tennis Channel. It's, you know, it's bonkers.
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot of ironies.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, who ends up replacing Chris and whether Chris actually does end up getting to the end of the year, because, I mean, it's... That in itself is an uncomfortable situation. Now
he must just want to go, oh, bog off, I'm going to the Caribbean. Do you know what I mean?
I might go with him. Sounds good.
If I were Chris, I'd say, can I have 10 months of gardening leave, please? Thanks very much. I'll clear my desk. See you later.
Can you have any other sort of leave? Because I'm not that into gardening. Can I have cooking leave? Because I quite
gardening
like
leave, David. Gardening leave just means being paid to nap and to bog all.
No wonder you want it.
This is the dream.
Yeah, it does sound awesome.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, should we talk about some tennis? Fine. Some actual balls that have been hit across the net. And there's been lots of them.
I'm watching some right now.
Are you? Who are you watching?
I'm watching Stan Wawrinka and Martin Fucsovics. It's an absolute barnstormer.
Is it? Oh, yeah.
Wawrinka's serving for it in the third, 5-4, but 15-30.
So what has caught
your... that's a nice backhand.
All right. soon to be out of date tennis news here on the Tennis Podcast, which Catherine
15-40.
Has been
Break
following...
Points, David.
All right. With some very extreme detail, Catherine has been following all of this because she's been presenting about it. And one of the first matches I saw on your coverage was Stan Wawrinka against Dan Evans. That was a good match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was on day two of the coverage. And that was, I mean, there have been a couple of good matches today, but I'd still say that's been the best so far. It was really high quality. I so enjoyed it. And pretty much everybody... on our team that I've spoken to about it says Dan Evans is playing as good, if not better tennis than when he was 41 in the world, obviously, which was where he was just before he got the drugs banned. So, yeah. I mean, that in itself is extraordinary. And also great credit to David Fellgate. And I think it's a credit to Dan for bringing David Fellgate on board, knowing that Fellgate isn't somebody that will accept half measures. I think it's a credit to them both.
Actually, on the subject of your coverage, your good friend Greg Rosetsky's been going full on, hasn't he, with the old predictions. Félix Auger-Aliassime beat Cameron Norrie and then beat Stefanos Tsitsipas. I mean, he looked amazing, Auger-Aliassime, in those two matches.
He's the business. And he is the business.
Greg promptly said this guy's going to be in the top 10 by the end of the year.
Yeah, he said this guy's going to be top 10. And I thought, I was thinking, yeah, you know, yeah, you're late to the party, Greg. Everyone's been saying that since he was about 14. And then he finished the sentence and said by the end of the year. And I thought, oh. Yeah, and then that was, to be fair, that was before he beat Cameron Norrie.
Right.
And then he went and beat Cameron Norrie, and then he went and absolutely bullied Stefanos Tsitsipas around the court. It was unbelievable. I cannot believe he's 18.
Isn't it weird? 4-0 record he's got against Tsitsipas if you include juniors. I mean, I don't know how much you can read into juniors, but...
Well, apparently a lot in their case.
And Tsitsipas was saying afterwards that, I mean, inevitably this schedule he's playing is probably catching up to him a bit. But at the same time, just as a sheer matchup, Auger-Aliassime just had his measure.
Yeah, it made he made Tsitsipas look overly flashy. He made Tsitsipas look like he had too little margin for error in his game.
Daniela was saying, wasn't it? Daniela Hantikova, yeah, on your coverage, I remember that.
Whereas Auger-Aliassime, he has the weapons. He has the unbelievable athleticism. I mean, who were we talking about the other day that seemed to have the absolute perfect build for tennis? In fact, was it Auger-Aliassime?
Yes, it was.
Well, I mean, he just does. It's funny, a couple of things that he said recently. First of all, he said, I really hope I don't grow anymore. You know, it is possible that at 18 he could still grow somewhere. And he said, I really hope I don't, because at the moment I feel like I'm the perfect shape. I have the perfect frame for tennis. So I don't know. How do you stop yourself from growing? Eat a load of junk food?
I'd love to tell you. I don't know.
I've asked the wrong guy. And the other thing he said before the Tsitsipas match was, he said, I know he doesn't like playing guys younger than him. I found that so interesting. And so it proved. He looked so rattled. I mean, he looked frazzled more than anything. And when he came into press, Tsitsipas, and said what you just recounted about, you know, I feel like I need a break from tennis. He had those sort of red patches under his eyes where he just looked sort of vacant. and not exactly present. But yeah, I found it really interesting that Auger Aliassime had clocked that he just didn't like playing guys younger than him.
Different pressure, isn't it? And actually, yeah. I think it was another thing that Daniela was saying. She's good, isn't she, by the way?
She is brilliant.
But she was saying that it is a different pressure. You know, Tsitsipas is somebody who loves playing Nadal and Federer and the big names because, yeah, I mean, it's not so extreme, but we've seen it with Kyrgios. There's no pressure. It's fun. You just go out there and you just puff your chest out. When you're playing these other players who you're supposed to beat, different thing altogether.
You've mentioned the K word.
Didn't go his way this time, did it? What happened to him?
It was the most predictable, unpredictable tennis result in the history of tennis.
He was going to play Djokovic, and he didn't.
Greg had already recorded a preview of Djokovic Kyrgios on his Instagram.
Greg.
Oh, his little face when Kyrgios trudged off the court with his shoes in hand.
Oh, no.
There was throwing of shoes. He lost to Kohlschreiber. Kohlschreiber played brilliantly.
Oh, he was fantastic,
Plays Djokovic. And I'm chuffed for him because, he's been around forever, Kohlschreiber. And yes, he's been a bit flaky in the past, but and possibly could have had more success than he's had because he's a stylish player, but he perhaps is a little bit underrated, doesn't get the credit he deserves.
He's always been an opponent, hasn't he? He's never been the story, really. And actually, probably the only time I remember really feeling like he was the story briefly was when he beat Roddick at the Australian Open in that stunning match. And yet, of course, the real story was Roddick's been beaten.
Roddick's been beaten by,
He hit an extraordinary number of backhand winners that day. But what a lovely tennis player to watch he is.
Yeah, he is. Exactly. He's smooth and he's stylish. And obviously a single-handed backhand is almost always aesthetically pleasing. And he made Kyrgios go into, I don't really care mode. I'm not really trying. I'm going to throw my shoes into the crowd. That's how little I care. I don't even want shoes. I turned my back on it all. But then turned back and watched diligently in order to present coverage about it.
Yes, and you'll no doubt turn your way back towards him when he starts playing like he did in Acapulco.
Of course I will. But anyway, yeah, that's Nick Kyrgios. Done.
Yeah, Nick Kyrgios.
Vavrinka's serving for it again.
Oh, right. 40-year-old.
And if he wins it, he'll meet Federer in a match that I think Greg has also already previewed.
Vavrinka Federer, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Oh, I like that. Excellent.
Yeah, but he's got to get the job done for Vavrinka. I think he's tried to serve for it. I think this is his third time. He's love 15. Can't get the job done.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see if you can.
I'll keep you posted.
Fantastic.
I am right in thinking people tune into this podcast for live scores, right?
I am looking at the draw. You're absolutely right about the Vavrinka Federer element. That is it. I mean, that is the beauty of this tournament as well, is players that have been down on the luck a little bit and end up with a rubbish draw in inverted commas, but that rubbish draw ends up being to our enjoyment, really, because you just get these barnstormers early on.
And I think there's a lot of players willing for Vavrinka to do well here, well, sort of everywhere, for a little while, because they want him to get back up into the seeded positions. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants Stan Wawrinka to be unseeded at the French Open,
no.
Put it that way.
Oh, crikey, yeah, that would be quite a player to have to play early on, wouldn't it, at the French Open on clay. The other player I wanted to mention as well, Ivo Karlovic, 40 years of age, oldest player ever to win a match at a Masters 1000 event, beat Borna Coric. I mean,
twice. He's twice been the oldest player to win a match at a Masters 1000.
Amazing. Amazing. What a great story. And I mean, he could carry on like that for years, couldn't he? I mean, yeah, he's going to be 52, still winning.
I mean, it's a serve that won't age. I mean, you don't have to move to hit a serve, do you?
No, I mean, I'm 45 and I still serve like a dream.
He's got this incredible record against Coric. I don't think he's ever lost to him. So that was a dream, a second round matchup. Yeah, good on you, Evo.
Excellent, excellent. Kyle Edmund is back and winning today. 6-2, 6-love over Nicholas, what's his second name? Jarry. Yeah.
52 minutes.
Wow.
I mean, Jarry was pretty rubbish, but Kyle was great.
Yeah. Okay, that's
there
that
you
analysed.
Go. Tune into Prime Video UK for more of that
succinct
detailed analysis. Yeah. I mean, it was, Kyle was really great and really imposing, you know. It was a really confident, dominant, ruthless performance. And I hope that that's a sign of him being in really great confident shape. All I'm saying, I just have a slight asterisk because Jarry just didn't offer him anything today. No. Didn't give him any reason not to feel anything but confident. So
poor old Jared Donaldson, who's been out for a while with injury, turns up against Rafael Nadal today and loses 6-1, 6-1.
Briefly turned up against Rafael Nadal.
It's not nice, is it? And also a note here, Ogier Aliassime, one of these is going to be a quarter finalist. Ogier Aliassime, Kecmanovic. Nishioka.
Former junior number one, Kecmanovic, another one of them, Serbian.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Nishioka or another Serbian, Jere, who's the chap we were featuring from the Rio tournament, wasn't it, a couple of weeks ago? The Serbian guy whose parents have very sadly passed away, and he won the title beating Ogier Aliassime in the final. So, yeah, we're going to get a new-look quarter-finalist. On the women's side, I think it's just... I mean, frankly, it's been the better tournament so far, partly because Serena Williams played Victoria Azarenka in her first match, and then the winner ended up playing Garbiñe Muguruza. Sadly, Serena, having played what many people regarded as one of the matches of the year so far, Serena beating Azarenka, really rolling back the years. Serena, I've just watched today, and she came out hitting the ball so sweetly, but she'd got some sort of gastroenteritis, and after a set, she couldn't play anymore. She lost 7 games in a row, and she was just unable to move around the court. It was really a real shame to watch. But, you know, we've had a lot of these sort of matches. You talk about Federer-Vavrinka. Last night, I saw Venus Williams against Petra Kvitova. Venus is 38 now. I don't think I've seen her more intense than she was last night, clenching a fist, shouting come on, just digging in and just taking the very best of what Kvitova got to throw at her, and she ended up beating it.
Yeah, I loved that, because people deign to question how much Venus cares still. They think, oh, she's just doing this because Serena's on tour and she can't think of anything better to do, and she might as well because she's still playing all right. No, she's not there to make up the numbers. She blooming loves it. She said, I'm doing this because I love to compete. And that was, yeah, it was an absolute sight to behold. I spare a thought for Serena for being forced to retire, but poor Victoria Azarenka. If anyone was deserving of an honorary place in round three anyway, then it would have been her, let alone the fact that round three match with Muguruza ended up being eventually a washout. You felt, again, it was like, what was that match at the Australian Open where I said you should have had a smoke-filled doorway in the sidelines and Victoria Azarenka should have come on in a cape and said, don't worry, guys, I'm going to play the second set. That needs to be a thing in
tennis.
Yeah,
I mean, come on, you know, all this political shenanigans, surely we can bring that in.
Or Serena should have called her up before the match and gone, Vika, I've got a dodgy tummy. I'm going to try. But could you just, you know, sit on the sidelines and
I'll
be available
to
sub in? Yeah, because my stomach's rumbling and it's not good.
Did you know that Venus Williams played her first Indian Wells before Grad Mat was born?
I did know that because I'm looking at those words on a screen before me and it's sickening.
It's horrible, isn't it?
He's put, that's before I was born, exclamation mark.
So pleased.
It's something, yeah, he's so pleased about it.
That's when I was 23. Anyway, Naomi Osaka got revenge.
Sent me a picture of yourself last night, David, from the commentary booth, where you looked about 83. It was horrifying.
That hurts.
Sorry, David. What that is evidence of what wonders a good night's sleep can do.
Yeah, which is why I'm recording the podcast at 4:18 a.m.
Yeah.
Thanks for airing that information on the podcast.
Well, you sent it to me.
For the many thousands. You notice I didn't actually post it, though, didn't you?
I didn't either.
I thought I'd keep it quiet.
I hovered over the button.
No, she's gone with the old 83 line. That's fine. What else we got?
It was not your best shot, David.
Okay, I admit that. I've got many better. Naomi Osaka got revenge on Kiki Mladenovic, which was from Dubai, wasn't it, the other week? And so Osaka plays Collins next. She seems happy, doesn't she, Osaka, now? She's got her coaching situation sorted with Jermaine Jenkins, and she just looks, in a good place again. Nice to see.
Yeah, somebody, I was in the hotel restaurant the other night, and in the way that Americans do, some bloke that's here on a conference struck up conversation with me. And, he obviously had a sort of passing interest in tennis. He very much knew who Naomi Osaka was and everything. But he sort of said, was she a bit of a sort of emotional train wreck? Is she does she not have the goods mentally to be world number one? And I was a bit tired, and I took issue with him big time. I was like, no, she's just, wears a heart on her sleeve, and life's tough sometimes, but life's really good other times. And
she is world number one, mate.
She's figuring it out. Yeah, she's world number one.
And she's won the last two slams.
Yeah.
Go and bog off.
I mean, I pretty much did say that.
Surprise me. So she's through to the next round. Daniel Collins next. Johanna Konta is out. She lost to Kiki Bertens today. Good
but
match.
But she played well. She really played well. 12-10, she lost the first set tiebreak. It was a thriller, that first set. It was on Stadium 2, and that's our Prime Video studio is actually sort of inside Stadium 2. And the crowd were absolutely loving that. In fact, great matches all round on that court today. And Stadium 3 had Denis Shapovalov finally playing good ball again, as Robbie Koenig would say.
Yeah.
He really did look good. He looked the business again against Steve Johnson. And he now plays Marin Cilic.
Doesn't this feel a little bit like the running Dimitrov saga from the first 4 years of the Tennis Podcast?
Am I getting lured in again?
Don't you think?
Am I not learning lessons from
We're
going to
be using lines like, he's making a believer out of me again, aren't we? In about 2 years' time, we're going to start saying stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, until he stops making rap videos, I won't be saying those words. I stand by this.
Okay.
Roger Federer has never made an amateur rap video in his life, and that's worked out fine for him. I really think that is, the policy to take.
You say that, but he made his Boyzone video with Tommy Haas and Grigor Dimitrov, didn't he?
But that was after he had won sort of 16 Grand Slams or whatever he was on at the time.
Oh, right. So if you're Serena Williams or Rafael Nadal or Novak Djokovic, you can rap away to your heart's content.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, sort of. It certainly feels slightly more acceptable. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not the audience for Chapo. That's his rap name, for Chapo's rap. I'm not the intended market.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's horrendous, but it's sort of mesmerizing.
You didn't know all the lyrics, I noticed.
No. I mean, they're very profound. there's life lessons to be learned from those lyrics, David.
I want to move on from Shapovalov to his country.
He was really good today, though, and I'm a little bit excited again. Vavrinka and Fucsovics are having a really meaningful hug at the net, David.
Because Vavrinka's won.
But this is quite a touching
so
moment.
So it's Vavrinka against Federer. Who's going to win that?
Oh. I'm going to do a Greg and say 50-50.
You cannot do that on the tennis podcast. You might be able to do that Greg, on the fancy television
Greg does it
screens.
On the telly every day.
Yeah,
so.
Well, yeah, he's not on the podcast, is he? For a good reason.
Federer.
Right, I'm going Stan. Go on, Stan. Right, what else am I going to say? Oh, yeah, I want to end on Bianca. I can't remember her name now.
Well, while you're thinking of it, Sloane Stephens lost 6-3, 6-6.
Yeah, that's how I was going to get onto
Vogler.
It.
How? I didn't see it. I was watching those live scores unfold, and I googled it afterwards, assuming she must have been injured. She didn't seem
no,
to be
well,
injured.
I didn't see the match either, but I saw the scoreline, and it was to Stephanie Vogler, who actually lost to the player I've just been trying to pronounce, which is Bianca Andreescu. And that one was 6-1, 6-love, I think. 6-1, 6-2, sorry. But you watch that and you would think, well, how on earth can Sloane Stephens lose to this woman? Because Vogler is, you know, a solid player. She, in words of Joe Jury, or how I was commentating, will just put it in every time. She gives you 100% every single time. And she clearly did. I mean, she was trying her heart out. But she's limited. And, you know, Sloane Stephens, on a good day, it would not be close. And yet this was not close the other way. And it's hard to believe. I mean, I can only assume Sloane Stephens wasn't feeling well.
The same thing Serena did,
yeah,
maybe.
She really can't have been well, I don't think, in order to have registered a scoreline like that. I know that might sound unkind to Vogler, but look, she is a limited player based on what I saw today, but then she was up today against a player in Bianca Andreescu who, whilst I might have forgotten her name for about 48 seconds, probably has given me some of the most uplifting tennis viewing that I've seen all year. And it was only a set and a half, but just the stuff she can do everything. It's just truly mesmerizing watching her use her angles, and she'll throw in a backhand slice and then she'll drive it and then she'll hit a big whipped forehand and come to the net and hit a low half volley dinked backhand drop shot winner. You're just looking at it open mouthed, because her potential, she's 18 years of age and she's 60 in the world already. She's already reached a final in Auckland. She beat Wozniacki on her way there. She beats two or three big names on her way there. I ended up losing out to Yulia Gerges, just sort of ran out of gas. But I just feel that talent-wise, this young woman has got it all in front of her, really do.
And Canadian tennis, to be a Canadian tennis fan right now.
Yeah.
These are the good times for Canadian tennis. They've obviously got some more established, I mean, Raonic, of course, the elder statesman of the crop. But, Ozhelia, Yassim, Shapovalov, Andreescu, they are in some shape.
Well, looking at Sloane Stephens' quotes here, I think this week is just a busy week, a lot of stuff happening. There's more asked of you here than there is everywhere else. So it's normal. It's tougher for me than normal. Practice wasn't too bad, but I think just sometimes you get a little bit overwhelmed. Quite interesting, isn't it?
Does she have kind of sponsor commitments and stuff?
Well, I think there's that. There's also the fact that she's no longer with Kamau Murray, who's obviously been in her corner such a long time. She had the US Fed Cup captain, Kathy Rinaldi, I'm reading here on the WTA website, as her designated on-court coach. Doesn't want to rush into a decision to hire somebody just yet. And, yeah, I mean, it just sounds as though she's just not quite there. And it worked so well, didn't it, with Kamau Murray that, yeah, he, I imagine it takes a bit of replacing, really. So we'll see. We'll see what happens when she gets back to Miami, because, of course, she won the title in Miami last year. She was wonderful. She beat Yelena Ostapenko in the final. I remember commentating on that. But, yeah, you do get this with Stephens. Joe Jury today said to me that when Stephens is on, she's the best player out there. But she's not always on, and when she's not on, it can be ugly. So We'll see. We'll see whether she can get a game together. Right,
better
Catherine.
Better than Osaka.
Well, that's clearly what Jo said, because she was absolutely categoric about it.
Wow.
And I mean, look, there's nothing she can't do, Stevens, when she's on a game, is there?
No.
Really, she can hit with power, she can move, she can hit angles, spins, you name it. But she didn't do any of that against Stephanie Vogler. But Mark Icard, Bianca Andreescu, exciting talent. Can't wait to see her in the next round. And actually, I think she's in the same section as Magrutha, I think. Could reach meet her in the quarterfinals.
Yes, she plays Chong Wong.
Who beat Elise Mertens today. She's
a
good player, too.
Beat Elise Mertens. Magrutha plays Burtons. I happen just to have the draw popped up on the TV screen in front of me. So the winner of Andreescu Wong would play the winner of Burtons Magrutha.
Mm.
It's a good draw. It's shaping up nicely.
Yeah, and as is the men's as well. I mean, there's still so many big names left. So I look forward to it.
Who needs Djokovic Kyrgios? Other than Greg.
Yes.
Greg does.
Yes.
Bless him.
Nobody's ever going to see that feature. Oh, dear.
No, it went out.
Did it? It went out, even though irrelevant.
Yeah. He said how much he was looking forward to it. Yeah.
Okay, all right, cool.
It may or may not have been deleted. I don't know.
Right.
But anyway.
Okay.
He gave us all, you know, something to look forward to briefly.
Gave us 2 days of hype from draw to defeat. So thanks, Nick. Right, Catherine, go and get to bed. You've got to be up at what time's your alarm set?
5:50 a.m.
Right.
Which is, let's face it, David, the night time.
Yes. And it's currently 4:29 a.m. here. So that's the sort of dedication we're bringing to you here on the Tennis Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week with another one. We're brought to you in association with The Telegraph. We're executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y. We love talking to you about tennis. Go and tell everybody you know about the Tennis Podcast. Tweet about us. Leave us a review on iTunes. Just tell your mates and maybe they'll enjoy it too, because that's what we want. We want as many people listening to it every week so that when we get up in the middle of the night, it feels worth it. See you soon.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to Amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's Amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.